Hi, this is Pat Shand, writer of Robin Hood, and you have jumped inside the pull bag.
Welcome to The Pull Bag. Join us as we dig out our latest comics and discuss them with a rotating panel of the GCRN crew. So sit back and enjoy this week's Pull Bag.
Hello, and welcome to The Pull Bag. This is episode 141. We're about 40 episodes behind Altered Geek, which, yeah, I could easily make up for that if I wanted to. I am, of course, TF2 and Mike. Joining me, since I don't know when, Steve Megatron. Hello, sir.
Jello.
Jello. Puddin' Pops.
you.
Oh, God. We are here. We are back. It's episode 141 of the Pull Bag, kicking off our June spotlight theme month, whatever you want to call it. We're going to be going back to Xenoscope's Robin Hood, the ongoing series. 2 years ago, Steve and I covered the first three trades in Pat Shan's Robin Hood run. And you guys would have already heard the new interview with Pat Shan, where I asked him about his two Kickstarters, Destiny NY and Clonsters. Clonsters is kind of like a combination of Ah, Real Monsters and Adventure Time. It's a collaboration between he and his future wife, Amy Grandfors, soon to be Amy Shand. Very cool, fun little project. It looks really awesome and interesting. So everyone go check that out. Go check out the interview, all that good stuff. So we are here. We are back talking Robin Hood. Where we left off, as I said, was at the end of volume three of the original three trades. And now we're going to start. They had a Robin Hood ongoing series for 20 issues plus an annual. So over the next 4 weeks or so, we are going to be reviewing one trade per podcast, or we may do two trades per podcast, depending on how I decide to edit this. I have no idea at this point. When. Had you, after we did the original run a couple of years ago, were you wanting to read more of this immediately after we finished, or how was that for you getting into the ongoing?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of wanting to check out more. The character was definitely something that was interesting, to say the least. Just because of the struggle the characters had to go through, and the art was good, depending on which, set of issues you're looking at. But no, I mean, I thought it was an interesting twist on the whole story.
Absolutely. Yeah, same here. I went when I first saw the Robin Hood ongoing, I was like, "Oh, cool, more Robin Hood. Yay, cool, very cool." And we actually had a preview, I believe, at the end of the Volume 3 Legend trade, I think. I could be wrong, but we didn't actually talk about that. But this is Grim Fairy Tales Robin Hood by Xenoscope Entertainment. Written by Pat Shan, art by Larry Watts, Tony Bersini, and Salmet Mugino? I'm sorry if I am butchering that name. Also, it says here on the inside of the trade that the art direction and design was done by Christopher Cody, and Pat was on editing. How they break the trade up is interesting. They break it up into chapters 1 through 6. Chapter 1, Outlaw for Hire. Chapter 2, Riot Girls. Chapter 3, The Cabal. Chapter 4, City Lights. Chapter 5, Grudge Match. And Chapter 6, A Maid Marian Mystery. We are not, because this is a trade paperback, folks, we are not going to go through all six of these issues individually because we would be here longer than we would need to be normally. But I will say that I do love how the first volume opens up and basically brings in any new readers fairly quickly within the first page of the story so far, without having to have had gone back and read like the Volume 3 Legend trade. When you looked at this, were you caught up enough with this story so far, Paige? How do you feel that that caught you up?
No, I mean, I think that it did pretty well in that sense. Like, I can't really remember the end of the third trade, mm-hmm. but it's still, like, somewhere in there.
Yeah, the end of the third trade is Robin saves Marion and they go to New York. So they leave Myst. So with the ongoing starting, we're actually in New York City at this point. And I absolutely love the covers for this series. The cover artists do such an amazing job on this series. It's so good. Some of my notes going through the first issue here. I love seeing Robin outside of her element because she's at this party. She's here to stop this corrupt politician type thing. And this is your standard, you know, work for hire, private eye, Nottingham investigation, because the firm that she and Marion have started up is called Nottingham Investigations. And it's your standard PI gig. As you were reading through this first issue, what were you thinking of the story and how it played out?
How it started out was kind of interesting. I was like, who was that? And then I was like, oh, it's her. And I'm like, why is she in this situation? I was like, okay, so she's doing it as, you know, because I thought to begin with that she wasn't there for the private eye.
Yeah.
Initially.
Yeah.
And then when I saw the stuff about the private eye and then her going back to, you know, looking like her, I was like, okay. And then I like how they did the little bit of deception with the eye cover.
Yeah.
With the lens that goes over her magic eye.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting too. I do have to say that the art looks like it's improved since some of the early trades.
Mm-hmm.
Not only in like color tone, but in just the level of detail.
Yeah, and it seems like it's a little bit more glossy. Like on the panel where it gives the story for the first issue, here, Outlaw for Hire. When you zoom out to that full page of Robin in the green dress, it seems like there is more detail to the characters, to the facial features, to the hair, to the dress, to the everything else. And I am really digging that. And I love how they basically give you like pop outs, you know, glamour lens. And it shows that she actually has a magic eye and what's actually in her green bag.
I got
bag.
The pop-up video from VH1.
I know. I wish I had asked Pat about that. And maybe I will. Maybe
us old folks remember that. But...
well, Pat just turned 30, so he's right there around.
Oh, I'm 32. Us. I mean, I'll be 31 later this month, and to me, like, VH1 was that back in the day, not whatever it is now.
Oh, so. Yeah, no, absolutely. But I'm saying Pat just turned 30 at the end of May, so happy belated birthday to Pat. I actually wished him a happy birthday on the interview, but... so he just turned 30, and I'm, of course, 37 in a row. So, yeah, we old folks have to stick together. What I love about most creator-owned or independent comics, and I'm not saying that regular publishers don't, like Marvel and DC, don't do this. IDW does this with their licensed things. I love looking at some of the backgrounds and seeing what kind of things they put in it. Like, we go to another panel here, and like I said, we're not going to go through this whole issue, but try our super dog, JJ's Red Hots. I'm like, what the hell? So I'm absolutely loving Larry's art. I think Larry is an amazing artist. I think he is doing very well. As we meet up with Marion... apparently, Marion and technology do not get along, because Marion is originally from Myst, and just seeing that, just, oh, wow. It's just so funny. What do you think of the interactions between Robin, Marion, and the new client, Sam, here, as we go through this?
It looked like your typical kind of private eye type of thing, but it also kind of reminded me a little bit of like Supernatural, of, you know, person has a problem, comes to the two people that understand and can fix the problem, and so it's a very similar trope that was used there, but it works.
Absolutely. And okay, so in the beginning of Robin Hood's run, when Pat was doing the first three trades, you know, she used to actually just rob banks. You know, Robin Hood, rob to the rich, give to the poor, that kind of thing. And she would keep part of the take that she took. But now, you know, being the reluctant hero, I guess you could say, you know, they have to find a way to make money. And, you know, paranormal investigations, I mean, it's not like she and Marion are going to, you know, put a bunch of proton packs on their backs. Although that would have been cool.
Ghostbusters! Xenoscope would do really well with Ghostbusters.
IDW does well with it. I mean, I have yet to read the Ghostbusters stuff from IDW, but I hear nothing but good things about it.
I hear nothing, so.
Dude, come on.
I had to throw that in there, because, like, I really don't hear anything.
Oh, well, maybe Halloween this year we'll do it. Oh, no, wait. That's out of time October. We can't do that this year. We'll do that next year.
Yeah, because there isn't the time to do it.
Yes. No matter how many DeLoreans we get. So Robin goes looking for answers about this priest guy, about this guy who is stealing witches' souls. And she goes into this bar and basically, you know, I think her line here is one of her lines is let's see, I don't know, it was the I don't know, it's in the second issue. That's my favorite line. I do love this first issue. It gives new readers the events of the past stories at the same time setting up a whole new thing for Robin. I think that's great. And the action and the art are very, very well done. And we have a little bit of a mystery kind of here at the end where she's got somebody following her, which is kind of crazy. And she and Marion are trying to figure out where, you know, where this priest is and what he's doing. And of course, you know, by the end of the issue, the priest, oh, he's in our church. Where else would he be? Of course, you know. Absolutely love that. I love the way Robin takes care of this guy, Peter. I think that's great. As the story goes through and continues, it's just so fun. And it's such a different thing. It's... when most people think of Robin Hood, they think of the male version. They think of him and Maid Marian and Little John and all of that. And I like that this is so different and so out there while still keeping with certain, you know, traditions of the characters.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting take on it. I mean, they've already killed off the other characters in,
yeah,
in Myst, so... Yeah.
So by the time issue 2 starts, we get Robin Hood versus the priest, which is really awesome. We find out what the priest is going to want to be doing and that he's working for, you know, a bigger consortium called the Cabal.
Why is the blacklist in here?
Why is the black... Wait.
The Cabal.
Oh. Yeah, that's true. They can't go back and do it now, but, you know, you put, you know, a giant guy with a red-brimmed hat or something as, yeah, I don't think that would work, but still. I don't know, they gotta call it something. I mean, a cult, a consortium, just something, so Cabal isn't that bad. I love Robin's, and I know this is bad, but I love her black trench coat over her traditional green uniform. I think that's just hilarious. I just absolutely love that. So we have a really good fight scene with her and the priest as that goes along. The line that I liked that she said earlier was the, so what do you think he's doing here? Getting promoted to the top of my shit list. That's what it is. And then the other line was, so tell me, what the hell is going on before I make you? Absolutely love that. What were you thinking up to the end of this fight and after she threw him through the window?
It was funny.
Mm-hmm.
I almost got kind of a, what is that show? It's, man, I can't remember. It's Van Helsing-ish kind of fight. Like, you got the person, lone person fighting, you know, whatever kind of demon
yep.
creature. So it I kind of got that out of it. But, I mean, it was your typical fight. I mean, there really wasn't anything
yeah.
spectacular to it, which was kind of nice to see because we've had a lot of people with magic.
Yeah. I think what's spectacular about it is how Pat writes in the dialogue and writes in Robin's quips. She's not as quippy as like a Spider-Man or a Dick Grayson Robin.
Or a Deadpool.
Yeah, or a Deadpool. But she is quippy enough to where it makes the fight go. It makes the fight scene go not too fast or too slow. It's very well paced out. We have a hospital scene with Marion and Sam, and we find out that the priest escaped. We also find out that Sam's friend that was in her coven with her comes in here, and this is the person that, you know, was, you know, supposedly tweaking off this stuff that the priest gave out. But they were giving it to everybody, and now they're going to go find and figure out what's going on with this priest guy. And then we have a home scene from Robin and Marion, and I love this. I think my favorite thing, and this actually surprises me, because I was never really... I reviewed two trades a couple of years ago, the Matt Fraction Hawkeye series, where it's Hawkeye on his day off. That's the basic premise of the series for those that don't know. And honestly, even though I love the Robin Hood fight scenes and the actual plot of the story, I think what shines here is the home life, the home time stuff with her and Marion, because they're, even though they're best friends, they are two very different people, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the scene here where Robin says, and I know your idea, no way, but it's brilliant. I'm not doing it. And then the very next scene, I can't believe I'm doing it. Okay. I guess the cat wanted to be on the podcast then.
Yep.
So we've got the roller rink stuff going on here with Robin and Marion, and they're watching that, and just because these are the girls that are in trouble from the priest. And as we go through this, we get the two of them on skates, and we get to meet the entire team here. And I like how Pat and the letterer people and all of that and the creative do the individual introductions. I think that's very well done on the panel where they're like, who are you? And then for us, the reader, it introduces everybody. And then they all make kind of introductions and explain the situation. I like that. What were you thinking up to the girls' locker room scene?
Not really sure where they were going.
Why were you not sure where they're going?
Well, I mean, I knew they were watching the roller derby, but I didn't really know what the point of it was.
Well, the roller derby is, these are the girls, these are the coven girls from Sam.
Oh, okay.
So these are Sam's friends, because Sam is on the roller derby team. So these are her friends, and their souls are being sucked out of their bodies. And as we get through the rest of the issue here, we find out that This guy, Peter, has been following Robin all the time. We have a nice little scene with them where Robin falls on her ass on the skates. I thought that was great. Peter kind of explains where he is and what he's doing and the fact that he's a librarian, and we have June's character come in. That's the freaking guy. That's the guy that was following me, and I was only following you to save you, kind of thing. We kind of close out the issue with everybody in the locker room that's a witch losing their souls, and we find out that the priest is actually right underneath the locker room.
Yikes. That was actually a pretty cool shot.
Yeah. That was an amazing shot. Absolutely love that one. Overall, I think issue 2 is very well done for this first volume. I think that it sets everything up nicely. We've already had one fight between Robin and the priest, so this one is more of finding out more about this villain and what they can do to stop him, to get this. And, of course, you know, we have the ending kind of cliffhanger thing. By the end of this issue, what were you thinking?
They're going to have to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
But it's no, I mean, I thought that the interactions were really, really well. And it's amazing how well they captured the female brain in this.
Mm-hmm.
Like the thought patterns.
Right.
Because a lot of their, you know, like a lot of the jumping between different stuff, you know, that they're conversing about in the, which that comes up more in the beginning of the next one. But, I'm still wondering what's going on with this guy that keeps showing up, but.
Yeah. Yeah, I was too at first. And then when I realized that, I'm like, oh, okay. It's a soul-sucking thing to bring back some beastie demon guy. I think what I love by the time the third issue opens is, and I've always loved this about Robin Hood and how Pat writes her, her internal monologues are amazing.
And that's what I mean. They capture the essence of the female brain in those.
Mm-hmm. Like, you know, in the opening of the third issue here, part of her opening monologue, or is it because I'm 22 years old and I don't know what the hell I'm supposed to do with my life? Ugh, stupid brain. So we get the priest starting this one off with his urn, and Robin interrupts that, punches him in the back of the head. The guy Peter picks up the urn and basically bolts. We have Marion and the other witches in a circle who are going to cast a spell to stop the priest and to basically take away his magic. Meanwhile, Peter runs away with the urn because that's what he wanted in the first place. I love Robin's line here. Chalk one up for the sinners. And we have another fight between her and the priest. The action here is great. It's basically her with her bow versus him with a gun. Yeah, I'm not sure you want to bring a gun to a fight with a chick who's got a chip on her shoulder with a bow, because she'll put an arrow right through you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We've got Peter with the urn and the spells happening here. We've got the priest trying to defeat Robin, and of course that doesn't really happen because they eventually suck out his powers. He's not dead, but because these witches are healers, so they're basically healing him of whatever's, you know, possessing him.
At least the vibe I got from that guy, though, were like he was very like John Constantine-ish.
Yep.
Even in some of his appearance.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You mean the priest or Peter?
Peter.
Peter, yeah. Peter, most definitely, yeah. The priest, he reminds me of Leslie Nielsen in Dracula Dead and Loving It a little bit. I don't know why, but that's just the first thing that kind of popped into my head. We have... we've got Robin telling Peter that it's over and the priest is down. And, of course, Peter has run away with the urn because that's what he wanted all along. And I love the next scene on the street where the open sewer grate is. The cop is like, "Are you messing with me? You know it's illegal to mess with cops, right? Swear on my mother, she jumped right down there." And then, obviously, they jump right back up. Love that.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. I think my favorite thing at this point in the trade is all of Robin's expressions. Both hers and Marion's, but just, like, the look on Robin's face after... Sam says, "We never actually settled on a price." And Robin and Marion just look at each other like, "Hmm." But Robin is looks like she's more angry than Marion is. So they come up with a deal. And we go back to them at home. We have a nice little scene between Robin and Marion. Where they say about the situation with Peter that Robin says Marion's too trusting, and Marion says to Robin, "You're too cynical." And they just kind of veg out and, you know, become, you know, they're still friends and all that stuff and whatever. And, you know. And this is when Marion tells her she'd like to give Derby a try, something normal, something different, you know, something that isn't magical. We get back to the priest with the black eyes, and he obviously survives, and this is where we meet the Cabal.
Hey, the Court of Owls.
You know, you're right, but I was going to say, wow, too many black mask impersonators.
No, it's the Court of Owls, because if you've ever seen the Court of Owls, they don't have the teeth thing, but...
I know, but because they do have the teeth thing, I was thinking of the villain, the Black Mask.
But, the upper part looks like the talons, though.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right. Wow. That's a little crazy and creepy. So we get introduced to the Cabal, which is kind of funny and cool. And my question is... Because I don't see any strings where the guy says, "Pity, what a waste of resources. He's taken his mask off." Oh, yeah, I see the strap now. I was going to say, how are they holding those on their faces? But I saw where the strap was. Overall, issue 3, I enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done. I think the action is going great. I think the story is progressing nicely. There isn't anything in issue 3 or any of the first 3 issues that jumps out at me as kind of like a WTF moment. Mm-hmm. By the end of issue 3, what were you thinking?
I want to know who these people are.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Stop monologuing, just do your job."
I know. Villains, you always get them with the monologuing. I can't wait for Incredibles 2, whenever the hell that's coming out.
Yep.
Anyway, issue 4 starts with a cat.
This one doesn't have as, like, sharp of art as the previous ones.
The art does... That's because this issue 4, the artist on here is Tony Bresini, so it's not Larry Watts on this one. And I like bits and pieces of the art in issue 4. Like this opening with the cat and the woman that doesn't want to deal with the cat. And wow, that poor cat. Jeez, I can't wait till Robin gets a hold of that girl. Oh my god. Um, So we get this woman going after the cat again, and it looks like her apartment has been really messed. Oh, that's why, because there's demons in the walls. I'm like, hey, it's Dana's apartment from Ghostbusters. That's two Ghostbusters references in one podcast. Wow. So we flash back to earlier where Robin is facing off with this lady about the cat, and she calls the police, and Marion drags Robin away. But Robin still goes to jail. And she says, I really thought they'd be on my side. So they get out of jail. We go back home with them. Marion is getting ready for roller derby, and because she's new on the team, she is fresh meat. And what I love about this issue, because it's the storyline city, it's the story is called City of Lights, but it's Robin and Red again. It's Robin and Red Riding Hood. Oh, I love Brittany. She is my second favorite character next to Robin when it comes to Xenoscope stuff that I've already read. So, what were you thinking up to the point that we met Red at this point?
I thought it was interesting that she got arrested, but because I didn't expect that from the previous panel, but no, everything seemed to just be normal story, you know, just waiting for something to happen, and of course it did.
Yeah, Brittany shows up and she tells Robin and Marion about Robin says, I ask what's new, but mass murder kind of puts a damper on small talk. And they're going after this vampire type cult club thing, where this chick is, raising a vampire cult or a monster cult here. And yeah, she tells me the story quickly. Brittany never really dwells on the details. For the past few months, she's been working undercover with a gang of monsters that had been planning something huge involving Manhattan and an uprising. So it's your traditional uprising story, but again, what Pat does to make this cool is how he writes the characters. So I absolutely love that. And I love the scene here where they... Where Robin, Marion, and Red are all, like, getting suited up. I thought that was hilarious. I thought that was great.
It was very Arrow-esque.
Okay, I'll take that. Arrow Season 5 finale was done very good. The sad thing is, the first thing I thought of was Batman Forever and that beginning of the suit-up.
Oh, the shtink.
Yep. That's the first thing I thought of. So.
It's still cool, I mean.
Yeah, oh, it's still very cool. I'm not saying anything against it. I'm just saying that was the first thing I thought of. So.
And then they ride the subway.
Yeah.
The most lame way for a superhero to go through, like, wearing their costume and everything, and everybody's like, just cosplayers, and they're just, like, not even paying attention. And.
Well, it is New York. I mean, how else are you going to get around? You know, I mean, you either walk or you take the subway. Not a lot of... I know people have cars in New York, but...
Bow and arrow, grappling hook.
I seriously doubt they can get from Robin's apartment on that to where they need to go. I mean, come on now.
You should set up an extensive set of...
levers and
lights,
pulleys?
Trying to think of the name of that too, but it's not coming to me.
Yeah, well, you know,
zip lining,
there you go. Boy, yeah, that would be kind of cool. Or a monorail. This is the same thing. It's almost the same thing as a subway, but still. I love how when they get to where they're going, even though they have somewhat of a crappy plan, that the crappy plan gets even crappier as they have to improvise on everything. I love how the action scenes between Robin and Red are done. How Red is down there fighting the people, and Robin is up on the rooftop still kind of like being a sniper with her bow and arrow, which is really friggin' cool. So what happens when your first shitty plan fails? You move on to an even shittier one.
Yep.
And we have, I love how this almost, you know, this kind of, it doesn't come to a very fast end, but
I like the quote though, you know, if I'm going to end, I hope they at least kill the cat lady.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope they at least kill the cat lady. Oh God. Now I am wondering, because we kind of go past this, because what they've set up here is, close to the end of the issue, is they've captured Robin and Red, and they're going to force them into a grudge match, which I think is absolutely fantastic. I love the art on this page. The panel where the lead female vampire chick says, Robin Hood versus Red Riding Hood in a fight to the death. In a fight to the death where they're kind of crouching down, facing off against each other. I absolutely love that. And that's how issue four ends. I like how issue four, we come to a conclusion almost on the priest stuff for now. We kind of meet the cabal at the end of issue three going into issue four, and then it sets up somewhat of another case with bringing Red in. So this issues four and five almost feel like a two-part story to me, like they are meant to butt up against each other, which I'm sure that's what Pat wanted to do in the first place. By the end of issue four, what were you thinking?
That it's gonna be interesting watching them fight.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Getting into issue five, we have Marion and Sam fighting off some more of these monsters outside of this place. And I love how Sam wants to step up. Like, we haven't really seen yet Marion and Sam's relationship, but we see it kind of as a friendship early here, and we see them kind of teaming up, and I like that. I think that's fun. I think that's interesting. And we have, you know, Marion's like, you're the cat from today, and the cat's kind of possessed, and then we go back to the grudge match between Robin and Red. These two are fairly evenly matched. And what I like about this grudge match between them is they don't seemingly have, they're not seemingly on the same page, but Robin knows that Red has a plan. And when she finally sees that plan, that is what is interesting to me. That they're not actually obviously fighting each other. They are, but they're not, you know, they're not going to kill each other, obviously. So what were you thinking of this first part of the grudge match?
Of the fight between the two of them?
Yeah.
I was like, oh no, all over again.
Absolutely. We go back to the Cabal penthouse with the two Brendans, father and son, and they have, you know, quite a discussion here, and we actually meet Dracula, which that was interesting. Looks nothing like Leslie Nielsen. Damn. And Dracula has some sort of a plan, which we don't yet fully understand. We get back to more of a grudge match, And this is where Robin finally sees Red's plan. I think my favorite part about this part is Robin's inner monologue, where she's like, some people like the former therapist. Some people like the former therapist I'm beating with a compound bow, for example. I like to talk about their feelings. And then we go to a panel where it's kind of like a chibi Robin and Red, and Brittany's like, talk to me about your feelings. No. I love that. That is so hilarious. So fun. We even have Marion, and we even have another chibi shot of Marion and Robin, so that's cool. I love that. I think the best panel in this issue is where she says, I hit things with my face, and it's the two of them headbutting each other. And this is where Robin sees where Red has the plan of shooting through her arm to hit the creepy scream face thing to basically end all of this.
I think it was funny how they figured it out, you know, yeah. And they blew away the creature.
Absolutely. I mean, that is some amazing art. The panel where the creature kind of, you know, the red splilch, all the blood stuff, and then, you know, all the souls coming out of the creature. I thought, because, well, it's all the power, because the city's in a blackout, so the power gets restored, so I like that. We get Robin and Red coming to terms with each other, which is great. She's going to destroy the main villain, and she's going to wolf out, because that's part of Red's curse, is that she turns into a werewolf. That's a whole new way of telling the Red Riding Hood tale.
Mm-hmm.
And the easy way, not necessarily the easy way out, but the interesting way out is Robin just throws a grenade down the sewer with the rest of the monsters in there. Brittany finishes off the chick, which is... Actually, no, the chick disappears.
Yeah, she just leaves.
Yep.
And then they're eating at a drinking at a coffee shop.
Yep.
And the cat is brought to her as a token of, hey, here it is for you.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, Marion has the cat, so Marion and Sam are there. And Marion's like, surprise! And that's how this one kind of ends, with the cabal kind of watching Robin, Red, Marion, and Sam. Absolutely love issue 5. I think issue 5 is very well done. It doesn't necessarily wrap up. It's still introducing the Cabal story to us. We're still finding out more about them. At the same time, issue 5 is giving us more of Robin, and especially with the team up with Red. I love that. I've said to Pat Shand, and he actually told me that, you know, he and Jeff Massey, who wrote the 10th anniversary Robin Red Riding Hood one-shot, they were actually going to do a Robin and Red team-up series, but it never actually happened, which kind of sucks. What were you thinking by the end of issue 5?
It'll be interesting to see how they make everybody connect together.
Mm-hmm.
With the Cabal and Robin, who's too concerned over the cat to pay attention to anybody else.
Yep. And issue 6 is the final issue for this trade. We have Pat Shand on writing, as always. We have Jamie Salasangsang Jr. I could be totally butchering that name.
You're like,
I'm
butchering
sorry.
That name.
I am so sorry, but that's just the way it is. And this is a Maid Marian mystery. We focus on Marion, which I like. I think this is cool that you know, the first 4 issues are mainly focused on Robin and her issues and her problems and what's, you know, they said in the very beginning of this first arc that, you know, Robin is the one that goes out and gets stuff done. Marion is kind of the one that stays back and does all the computer stuff and everything else. But I like that this one is solely, not really solely focusing on Marion, but it kind of is. You know, I like the line where Marion's like most cases dealing with the finicky bits of witchcraft, Robin is sitting this one out. Because, I mean, after the first four issues, Robin is really tired.
Sleepy time.
Yep, pretty much. So Marion is working on this case about this husband and wife. The husband wants to, you know, keep the wife from getting the bank account. She's entitled to half, this, that, and the other thing. We get to a dream sequence with Robin, because, as I said, Robin's asleep. So we actually get to see Will Scarlet again, briefly. So that's a nice little flashback dream sequence. And obviously Will's not exactly alive anymore, which sucks. And then this prompts Robin to wake up because she assumes that that Marion is in danger. And Robin gets up. She goes over because apparently the wife of the guy who they were investigating for the wife, everything has gone wrong with the witchcraft stuff, and the wife is really, really pissed. So Robin has to go out to take care of it. She and Marion are actually going to very different places. Robin's actually going to her therapist. Marion is going not to the coffee shop, but to a mystical store. I like the... I think what I like about this part of the issue is the therapist office scene where these people are kind of talking to each other, and they... the woman kind of starts talking to Robin, and I thought that was cool. What are you thinking for this issue so far?
It's interesting. It's definitely turning into the, you know, old private eye thing again.
Yeah.
In a sense. I mean, it hasn't, like, they're getting repercussions for doing, like, I mean, she had the dream telling that, you know, something's going to happen to Marion, and then getting reprimanded by the crazy lady yelling at them.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind it being the PI thing. I think that's cool. I'm sure there are, listeners, don't go off on me. I'm sure there are plenty of non-superhero detective stories, PI stories out there. But again, we had how many... You know, we had three trades, you know, a lot of issues of all of the stuff in Mist and everything else. So I like that they're doing this in New York. I think that's fun. I think it's cool. We get Marion going to this kind of, I guess, soothsayer or something, because she wants to find out about some stuff. We go to back to the therapist office, and the therapist calls her full name. Whoa, middle name alert. Love that. They are introduced to each other. And they start talking when a giant monster starts climbing the building. Hey, look, it's the Lizard, or it's Doc Ock, or I don't know who the hell that is. As soon as anything starts climbing a building, I just think of Spider-Man.
Funny.
So we get a go-between between Robin's therapy session and Marion's session with the mystic here. I like that. I think that's interesting because we get character builders for both of the lead characters in the story. Did you have anything that stuck out in your mind in this back and forth between the two scenes?
No, just both of them getting advice from two different people.
We have the monster breaking into the office window, and we go back to the mystic and the whole thing with Avella and how Marion has her magic, and basically the mystic telling her, oh, well, Avella's either dying or dead, and in time your magic will be gone. And we go back to Robin fighting the monster, and the therapist like, okay, so that's your line of work. It looks like she pulls the thing's heart out, and then she pulls its tentacle out and stabs it with its own tentacle. Okay. And it doesn't look like actual blood. It looks like energy. It looks like energon, dark energon spewing out of that thing, because it's all purple and stuff. Hey, anytime I can get a Transformers reference in, right? We go to the Mesopotamia, and we find out that the Cabal was the one that sent the Lurker. They're still trying to figure out who this girl is, and they all agree, once the shift is complete, we take care of our Robin problem. So that's what they're planning. They're planning some sort of shift, and one of them says maybe Malik's captive will be some sort of use, and we see that Malik has Avella tied up and in chains, and yeah, she doesn't look too good. She looks like she's needs some sort of medical attention there. We go back to the apartment. We have Marion telling Robin that she lied to her and that she's gonna lose her magic. And Robin's like, you know, magic doesn't make you who you are, right? You know, but it's a part of me. And then Robin says, you know, I lied to you too, and I know. And they kind of, they make up. I don't see Marion and Robin ever really kind of, you know, going their separate ways. Of course, I haven't read further into this series yet. So, you know. And we end on that, where they're like, you know, Marion's like, I think everything's going to be okay. This first trade, I think, was very well done. I think the story is progressing nicely. Each issue has a specific thing, with the underlying storyline being the Cabal and being the mysterious thing, where Robin and Marion don't know much about them, where the Cabal doesn't know much about Robin. Meanwhile, you have these... It's actually the perfect way to do a one-hour television show, where you have a running through storyline at, you know, in the underneath, and you have basically a one-off episode type deal on the surface. So that's what I liked about this as far as the writing. What were you thinking on the writing by the end of this trade?
Oh, it's very promising in setting up for something much larger in the future, which... It tied up this return to the universe very well, and then, you know, set up the what's to come.
Absolutely. And Xenoscope is so good on... I know a lot of comic companies do this. They do the multiple covers. DC sometimes does it. Marvel sometimes does it. IDW does it a lot. Xenoscope is by far one of the more independent publishers that does so many covers. And at the back of this trade, we have a cover gallery of various covers from all six of these issues. And I just love looking at them all. I'm sure I have favorites, but just all of the various ones are just so fun to see. I think my favorite one out of the ones that Red Riding Hood is in is the one where it's her standing on the car with her sword. It was number 4, cover C, done by Johnny Desardins. Again, probably butchering that name, but absolutely think that was a great, great cover. What did you think overall for the art for this first arc?
No, the art was really good. I only had issue with like that little bit at the beginning of that particular issue.
Yeah, that's what I noticed, is some of the issues had the artist change. Like Larry Watts wasn't working on all six issues, and I understand that. You know, maybe they wanted to give somebody else, you know, a shot on the art. I'm not sure. Maybe Larry was busy doing something else. And that's fine. Would I have liked a consistent art style throughout all six issues? Yes, but I don't mind the art. The only time I mind artist changes is if you have more than one artist on a book. Transformers from IDW is a good example of this. If you're doing past and present and you have one, like the main artist of the book on the present stuff and the guest artist on the past stuff, that's fine. But a couple of times they had, I think when they were doing the Dark Cybertron event, they had like six artists on each issue of that comic as it was going through. And that's not, that to me is a little too jarring. But this one was fine. I didn't mind that at all. Closing this out, what would you give Volume 1 Riot Girls 0 to 5?
I'd give it about 4.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'll give it about a 4. As I said, I love the story. I think past writing is only improved since the first three.
Yeah, I agree.
Since the first three trades of Robin Hood. I think his comedy works with Robin when she's I love it when he has her up against strange people, because that's when she can really get quippy. And then I also love it when he writes her and Brittany together, or her and Marion together, because you see the friendship between her and Marion as we go along. So I'm also on board with a 4. Join us next week, folks, for Robin Hood Volume 2, which is called Monsters in the Dark. So that's issues 7 to 12 of the series. And where can the people find you online, sir?
Mostly on the Twitters, at SCP21.
I am at TFGN Mike on Twitter. You can follow The Pullbag on Twitter, at The Pullbag. Please do so. Also follow at Geekcast Radio for all the other network updates. Make your great escape into comics, and we will catch you next week with more Robin Hood. Hope everybody enjoys. If you have not read this series, if you've not read this character from ZineScope, people, please do so. It is so fun, so refreshing. Pat Shan, Larry Watts, all the other artists, geniuses. Just damn geniuses.
You've just heard the latest episode of The Pullbag, the GCRN's comic review and discussion podcast. There are several ways to get in touch with us and leave feedback for the show. You can visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on the episode and all of our different podcasts. You can rate our show on iTunes. Be sure to leave us feedback. Call the voicemail line, 502-526-5821. Please remember to tell us the show you are leaving the message for, and your name. Become a fan of us on Facebook by searching Geekcast Radio Network. Send us an email, feedback, at geekcastradio.com. Follow us on Twitter, at Geekcast Radio. So until next time, make your great escape into comics, and unleash the geek in you.